Good morning. Welcome to the Chelan Public Utility District Board of Commissioners regular commission meeting. Today is April 4th. I'm presiding today in President Steve McKenna's absence. The other three commissioners are present. Actually, Gary Arsenault is going to be a few minutes late, but he will be attending. Clerk of the Board, Rebecca Newman, is here, as is Eric Walquist, lead counsel, and Sean Smith, managing director, is acting general manager in Kirk Hudson's absence today. Kirk is in Washington, D.C. on PUD business. So for those of you attending remotely, please remember to mute your device when you're not speaking. Please state your name and your address for the record. Any other housekeeping items, Rebecca, we need to take care of before we move on to the agenda?
I think you're good.
We're good? Okay, great. Thanks. So we'll start, as we always do, with the Pledge of Allegiance and the Safety Minute, led by Kathy Melton. And I know Kathy is on. Welcome, Kathy.
Thank you. All right. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America,
to the Republic for which it stands, one nation.
Oh. Okay.
Okay.
There we are. Okay.
Oh, I was going to say, Commissioner Congdon, your screen froze up.
I know it did. Are we okay now?
Yep, you're moving.
All right, thank you.
Okay. All right, well, good morning, everyone. This is Kathy Melton. I'm Customer Service Program Analyst, and I'm providing today's Safety Minute. And what we're going to cover today are some tips for burning your yard debris safely. It's getting to be that time of year where we're all anxious to go out and tidy up our yards and kind of get rid of the everything that was left over from the winter or things we didn't get to in the fall. So we want to make sure that that is successful and everybody stays safe. Next slide, please, Rebecca. And so, of course, first thing to keep in mind is if you are going to be burning that yard debris, everything is still very, very flammable. Last year's grass, any of those items that were left over through the winter, although it may look green out, things are very flammable. So, we want to keep everybody safe. Next slide, please. So where to start? So, you know, we've repeatedly remind people, call before you dig. Well, this is very similar to that. And this is either call or click before you burn. Excellent resource is the Washington State Department of Ecology's Daily Burn Decision. And you can gain access to that at the Ecology website. Or there is a 1-800 number. It's 1-800-406-5322. And then an easy route to get through there for Chelan County information is to press 1, and then prompted, press 2. And then that will give you the daily report for Chelan County. And good rule of thumb with that is that if the wind speed is greater than 10 miles an hour, do not burn. So clearly our area would not be a day to burn today, considering we're under a high wind advisory at this time. Another thing you'll want to make sure of is that burning is actually allowed in your area. And so burning yard waste is allowed within or outside of the urban growth areas. Within urban growth areas, that is prohibited. A lot of people would assume that if you're within or outside of city limits, that would be that marker. But it does have its own unique footprint. So double checking that it is something that you can do in your area is a first step. And you can either get that through the Ecology website or call in your local fire department. Once you've confirmed that the wind speeds are good and that it's allowed in your area, then you'll want to make sure that you've got the proper equipment available to you. And that, of course, would be some shovels and that you have access to water so that you can suppress that fire if a flare-up does occur. And then, of course, always have one person tending to the fire in case that flare-up happens. So you'll never want to start a fire and then wander off to go do something else. Next slide, please. Some general guidelines, burning that natural vegetation, that's okay. But garbage, building debris, old tires, all that good stuff. Nope, that is not okay. There are different ways to discard those things, and those can be taken to the landfill or other things. Maximum pile size, you should keep that to about a 4 by 4 foot size with a 10-foot barrier around that fire that's free of any other combustibles. Burn barrels are illegal. And another thing to keep in mind is if you have an orchard, that beyond pruning, which that's this time of year as well, burning those limbs and a few whole trees, you'll need to make sure to get an agricultural pile burn permit. Again, back through the Department of Ecology, they'll be able to provide that to you. Next slide, please. And if burning is something that you're just not comfortable with, or of course, if you've confirmed that that's not something available with where you are located, there's some alternatives that you can consider. Composting is a great alternative. Wood chipping, you can get yourself some free mulch for your flower beds and gardens. Of course, waste management provides curbside pickup. You may be able to arrange something with your community or your neighborhood and perhaps split costs with being able to take some of those vegetation or yard debris to the landfills. So those are some alternatives to burning. Any questions?
Any questions for Kathy? Commissioners?
No questions for Kathy, but nice job. And it took me down memory lane where I violated basically everything that you talked about today and embroiled my neighbors and had a house party for the Chelan County Fire Department and was chastised routinely neighborhood-wise and by the department for my lack of diligence. So all I will say is I will confirm everything you said is what they told me to do that day. So thank you so much.
So yeah, Dennis, that must have been in the days when you were a farmer.
No, it was when we lived on Westridge Place. We had that bank, and I wanted to create a little space between the sagebrush and my backyard. So it was my property, right? I can do what I want. Well, not exactly. So it was a learning lesson.
Kathy, yeah, great job. Thank you. Really timely. What was the number? Would you repeat again, Kathy, the number for call before you burn?
Of course. Yeah, it's 1-800-406-5322. And then to get direct access to Chelan County information, it would be option 1 and then option 2.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks. Nice to see you again. All right, let's look at the consent agenda. Are there any requests for additions or changes to the consent agenda, commissioners? Sure. I see him shaking. All right. So if there's no objections, then the agenda stands as presented. At this time, I'm going to turn the meeting over to our acting general manager, Sean Smith. Sean is a managing director, and I'll let you take it over from here, Sean.
Good morning. Good morning, commissioners and the public. I'm first going to go to the North Shore substation update with Jenna Rahm and Gary Rice. They've been here before about the substation, and this is the next update.
We'll start with Jenna, and she'll give an update on this is Gary Rice, project manager, the PUD. Jenna Rahm will give an update on the outreach efforts, and then I will give a update on the project towards the second half of the presentation.
All right. Good morning, commissioners. Like Gary said, I'm Jenna Rahm, customer outreach specialist working on the North Shore substation. Just want to draw your attention really quick to this opening slide. This is just a photo of the North Shore substation site. Just to get you a little oriented, it is looking sort of towards the east, and that pole that's up on the side, the transmission pole, that's kind of the limit of our 5-acre parcel, and then coming back towards where the camera is located, that orchard area, that's where the site is located. So just so that you have a picture in your mind when we're going through some of these more technical drawings. Next slide. So in this update, we're going to provide a quick recap of the February 16th public meeting where we went over the design status with our stakeholders, present our final design concept to you, and talk about next steps for the conditional use permit, construction contract status, and a little update on midsummer construction activity that we anticipate. Next slide. So on February 16th, we last came to you in early February prior to this meeting. February 16th, we did hold a public meeting with our stakeholders. We had approximately 8 Zoom connections and 6 attendees in person. We held that meeting as a hybrid down at the Lakeshland Chamber of Commerce. They actually have really great technology for it, so it went pretty well, all things considered. Couple little tech hiccups, but otherwise it was a great hybrid meeting for us. The staff that we had at that meeting included myself and Gary, Vicki Griffin from Real Estate Services, and then Chris Overdorf, who is with SCJ Alliance, is the landscape architect who we hired for the design phase of this project. And that presentation included a lot of material from Chris. He did an overview of visual resource management principles. So that's sort of the basis for the work that he does in landscape architecture, is sort of helping to protect our visual resources in areas that are aesthetically sensitive, like the North Shore Substation site location. We also presented a view shed analysis and some lines of sight, which I'll show you some graphics to kind of explain that a little more, and then some preliminary design concepts that we could discuss with those stakeholders. Next slide. So we showed you a version of this back in February when we came to the board meeting, but this is just a reminder of that view shed analysis that SCJ Alliance pulled together for us. So this is sort of showing if we had 25 points on the built out substation, you know, that's including the tops of certain structures, the fence line, you know, even at ground level, things that are down there, how many of those sites could, or those points could people see from different areas near the site. So the pinkish colored areas, those would be more view shed impact. And then as it sort of goes out to purple and then eventually blue, that's less and less view shed impact. And then if there's no color over top of it, they don't anticipate that they'll be able to see anything from the site. So as you can see from this view shed analysis, looking up to about a half a mile out, as we anticipated, probably the most view shed impact is over in the Pinnacle Place neighborhood. And then on the backside of Henderson Road, where there's a few existing properties, but also some developable properties. Next slide. So taking that information, we developed 5 different lines of sight. So these are just generally looking from a direction where there's maybe a neighborhood or the potential for a neighborhood, to try and get a feel for what they would be looking back towards if there's absolutely nothing built out at the site. So this is no landscaping, us not really doing anything. This is just what their view impact would be in that case. And then if you go to the next slide, this is an example of what one of those lines of sight analyses would look like. So what they were trying to present during that meeting was that you have a couple of different options. You can either try to block the view by putting things to mitigate that right up next to the site, or you can pull that in strategy 2 kind of into the middle ground. And what happens is the more you get into the middle ground, the smaller those items need to be in order to, you know, block that view, because from your perspective, you're closer to it. And so that's what we kind of walked through with all 5 of those lines of sight, but I didn't put all 5 of them in this presentation. Next slide. And then this is just sort of a preliminary drawing that was helping to convey that same concept, but overlaid on our site. So as you can see, it sort of proposes some screening closer to the substation site on our 5-acre parcel there, which is the red outline, but it also kind of talks about the concept of adding some supplemental screening and landscaping off of our 5-acre site in that sort of middle ground area. It also captures the existing trees and shrubs and things that already exist out on the site. So as you can see in that middle ground screening, there are some trees that already exist there along that ravine. And part of what the landscape architect talked about is if we could kind of just plant a little bit more next to and around there, that could kind of help supplement that as a way to help shield the substation from view. And the general concept is just to help all of this area sort of blend in with the natural environment, planting things that look similar to the types of trees that would already be out there, enhancing things that are already growing naturally out there to try and make it just get lost in the background so you don't really notice the substation as much. Next slide. So generally, when we presented this, we had a lot of support from our stakeholders overall for this design concept. So the sort of screening and helping it blend into the natural background. We also heard loud and clear that they support us approaching those private property owners that we had kind of preliminarily proposed putting some off-site landscaping or shielding. So in order to implement that, we would need to get the permission of the property owners of those middle ground properties. So we are actively working through that right now. We also heard positive feedback on the district pursuing a quieter transformer for the site. We were able to get a quieter transformer that Gary can talk about a little bit more, but noise was a consistent concern of our stakeholders. So they were really happy to hear that we were looking for those quieter pieces of equipment and also proposing some noise shielding using the landscaping that we're proposing in this design. A lot of appreciation for the fact that we'll have no nighttime lighting on the site, except in the event of an emergency, obviously. If we need to have crews up there working on something in an emergency, they would probably light the site up. And then...
Could I ask a question about that?
Yeah.
If security lighting, you talk about a nighttime emergency. What about if there's an intruder, how does that get measured? With lighting, is there motion sensors? Wildlife would go crazy.
Gary, so, can you talk about that?
Yes, this is Gary Rice. We've spoken about that with our security department, and we'll also have security cameras throughout the site. We won't have motion sensors, like you mentioned. Those are problematic with all the wildlife around. So the lights will be off, and we will have security cameras. Other than that, the site is fenced, and we have three runs of barbed wire at the top of those. And our fencing for a substation site is actually 7 feet of fabric and 1 foot of barbed wire. So that's basically all that we have. Other than typically at the top of the road, we will have a security gate that will keep people from just driving down there.
And the cameras are all probably infrared type cameras.
No, they're not infrared type cameras. They're the infrared's usually used if we're trying to spot some sort of a problem with something heating up or something like that. And our security system just has cameras, so it will be a dark site and we'll have cameras. So, if someone came up and cut into the fencing or did something like that to get in, we don't have a lot of security other than our cameras to watch for something like that.
Okay, thank you.
All right, and final piece of feedback, as our stakeholders continue to support and be happy with the district's previous commitment to underground the new distribution that we're building out of this substation. So we kind of circled back and reminded of some of those previous commitments, and I think generally stakeholders were really happy with how we followed up on those commitments and progressed this design forward. So, Gary, do you want to take it from here?
Can I ask a question before we move on?
Yeah.
And this is just dovetailing on Commissioner Smith's question. And this is just a point of clarification. Is it at my home I have cameras? And the cameras have the ability to see images at night in the dark without lights being on. And I don't know if that's called infrared or what that's called, but it adds that extra layer of protection should some prowler come at night in the dark and try to break into my house. I at least have an image of who that is. Will our cameras have that kind of technology at this substation?
This is Gary again. I would have to follow up with our security department. I don't know the technology that they use for the cameras at the different substation sites. I just know through my experience of working with the recent Holly substation and Omi substation, they said that they rely heavily on cameras. It even came to the point that we were talking about enclosing the fence lines to where you couldn't see through the fencing, and they said that wouldn't be a problem with them because they have good cameras within. So I could follow up on that and get back with you.
I know from my questioning, it just has to do with, as we look around the country and we start seeing people doing vandalism to substations on purpose, that was the basis of the question. So I'd be curious to know that, Gary. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, I can check with our security department, Michael Wilson, I believe it is.
Okay, thanks.
All right, if you'd like to move on to the next slide, I can give you a little more of the technical information about our substation. As Jenna pointed out in the very first slide, we are built down into a little bit of a ravine here. We bought a bigger piece of property than we would normally buy for a substation due to the topography that we had, and also the fact that we have a transmission line cutting across a portion of the property right in the vicinity. So the red lines that you see there, the outer limits of those red lines actually define our 5-acre parcel that the PUD bought, and you can see that the transmission lines go through that. This drawing representation is very close to our final that we will go out to bid with. It has some features in it that were requested in our conditional use permit pre-application meeting back in December. We had a meeting with the county, and they had really three main comments for us. One had to do with the way that we exit off of Henderson Road. We gave them a couple options, and what you see here is what they preferred. We exited at the same location of an existing driveway to one residence and another lot. That exit separates very quickly, and to the north is our substation exit. It'll actually be a little bit higher than the neighboring property exit to the south that you see. The reason for that is we pull in lowboy trailers, and you have to exit fairly flatly off of a existing road so that you don't drag the trailers. So we have what we call a vertical bend in the road, a very gradual vertical bend, and then it tapers off steeper. So if we would have shared the same driveway, the owner's driveway would have been very steep at some point. So this was an arrangement that the county preferred, and so did we. Vicki Griffin with our real estate department is also talking to the adjacent property owners about this concept. The two other things were, once we get down to our access gate, the county fire marshal said he would like to see an emergency turnaround down near the bottom of our substation site. So you can see a what looks like a little bit of a hammerhead. It would be just north to the entrance gate there. That'll be like a parking area and also an emergency vehicle turnaround area. And the third thing was a stormwater retention pond. Because our access is so steep, it actually is about 13 or 14% at the steepest portion, our driveway will be paved all the way down to the site. And then since the exit is in the same location as the entrance to our site, we're actually proposing to pave within the substation itself, just the drive path. So all those darker areas you see will be paved. So I guess the last feature, which is actually a Chelan PUD thing, where you can see where the transmission line is to the south of our site. We built a sloped building pad there. That was at the request of our transmission department, who will actually be constructing the new taps in the existing line. They requested a working area there since our site is on a slope. And what we ended up with is what you see, a fairly flat piece of property with a slope, or I should say a level piece of property with a slope. And the two wooden poles that you saw that make up the transmission structure that Jenna showed on the very first slide, what we intend to do is put two steel three-pole structures. So three poles will constitute one structure. We'll put one of those structures on either side of the existing pole and then loop into our project site and then loop back out again. So that's a feature that will be seen by the public as well. So the last thing I guess I could mention is The orchard owner needs to maintain his orchard access road, so you can see a few remnants of that on the north side of our project site where we tie off of our road, then we tie around our substation to provide existing access that the orchard operator has now. So we gave this to SCJ. They were actually working before this, and we gave this as a baseline for them to do their final layouts for us, and that's what I will show you next. If you move on to the next slide, just as a refresher, I wanted to bring up this slide 7 that Jen showed earlier. These were our concepts that we had at the February 16th meeting, and we're going to combine what I showed previously in the site grading with this layout right here and actually produce something that a landscape contractor could build. So next slide, please. All right, this is very close to what we will go out to bid with and what we're planning to go out to bid with. And you can still make out the district's 5-acre parcel, which is kind of important. So if you can make that out with our substation in the center of it, you can see that we have different varieties of shrubs and trees. We did have that reviewed by our in-house park department and facilities department. They thought that the species that were chosen would be adequate for the area. And then to augment that, the open circles that you see are the existing vegetation outside of our site. We show a little bit of new vegetation tied in with those, just as Jenna was mentioning. And it's important for us to distinguish between what we're doing on our property and what we're doing on adjacent neighboring properties, because we'll need to work out agreements with the neighbors to allow us to do that. So those talks are already in progress, but for the purpose of submitting our conditional use permit, we will submit what we plan on doing on our own 5 acres. So the next slide you will see is actually our CUP drawing, and it just takes away the vegetation that we're doing on the neighbor's property, and it makes it pretty easy to see the existing vegetation that's outside of our property. So this is what we would go forward with for our CUP drawings, and we actually intend to do that, would like to do that concurrent with our bidding processes. We've done extra outreach, and which augments the CUP process, and now we would like to move forward with the official county process for the conditional use permit. Is there any questions up to this point on the landscaping that I might be able to answer? All right, and we can go on to the next slide then, and I'll tell you the next steps. This month, April, we want to present the preferred design to our stakeholders and to the board, so that's what we're here doing now. In the next week or sometime next week, I think Jenna's planning on Wednesday, we would like to have a circle back meeting with the stakeholders and show them the most recent information that we have, which you've just shown here. I would like to work on the conditional use permit application, and after we speak with the public, file that conditional use permit application. We do have our technical design continuing on from an electrical standpoint and also from the landscape architecture standpoint. The landscape architecture right now is working on irrigation design. We would like to move that forward and actually go out to bid in May for our complete construction contract, which would include the landscaping. And we have a planned construction award in July. And all of this is moving forward so that we can have concrete foundations in place in September so that they can cure adequately, so we're ready to receive the transformer when it arrives at the end of October of this year. That concludes what we were planning on talking about, but if anyone has any questions regarding the outreach or landscaping, I could answer those for you.
Thank you, Gary. Commissioners, any questions or comments?
Okay.
Then. Just glad this phase of it's moving along. Yeah, just glad this phase of it's moving along quite nicely. It kind of had a tough start, but it's coming to a nice conclusion, and a good effort on the part of staff, and thank you so much.
I agree. yeah, Gary and Jenna, good, really good presentation. Nice to get the update. We haven't talked about it for quite a while, so appreciate the update. How many people, I'm just curious, how many people attended the public meeting?
So we had 6 that came in person, and then we had 8 Zoom connections, but some of those people on Zoom had more than one person, so it's slightly more than that number reflects. I didn't always know how many were on the Zoom connection, but sometimes there were 2 or even 3 people.
But it was well received. People seem to appreciate all the work, the work that you've put into this.
Yeah, the meeting was really positive. I felt like it went really well, and it was a really great discussion, and we got some really good feedback from stakeholders, and I think a lot of support for moving forward with this design concept.
Good. All right. Thank you. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Item number 4 on the agenda, Confluence Parkway due diligence, presented by Michelle Smith. We had some public comments. She was going to summarize.
Okay. Good morning, commissioners. You can hear me okay?
Yes.
We can.
Good. Okay. Michelle Smith, Director of Licensing. Yes, I'm here this morning to provide you a summary of the Confluence Parkway public open house that we held, the PUD held last Wednesday, March 30th. And our intent was to provide more opportunity for customer owners and the public to learn about the city's parkway proposal and to hear community thoughts and concerns specific to the impacted areas of Confluence Park and the Rand Natural Area, which is owned by the PUD as recreation mitigation under our federal Rock Island license. So I'm here to report we had really good attendance. We estimate that the combined public attendance, which included both a morning and afternoon trail walk and 2 separate workshop sessions, totaled about 100 people that came to share their thoughts and learn more about the city's proposed Confluence Parkway project. I would like to take just a brief minute to thank the team that helped us put this together and make it a success. Included Neil and Rachel, Ryan Baker, Vaughn Pope, Jeff Osborne, Kate Taylor, Matt Shales, Janelle, Marty Whiteman, Teresa Guerrero, Justin Erickson, and Commissioners McKenna and Arsenal. I'd also like to thank the City of Wenatchee staff and Mayor Kuntz for also attending. They were helpful in answering project-specific questions that we couldn't answer at the open house. We did receive some really good input. What we heard during the open house covered a variety of project elements, most commonly including noise, details about the pedestrian bridge, the overall change in experience and aesthetic for recreation users, and protection of the vegetation and wildlife components of the Harran area. Most of those that attended also had questions regarding project-specific questions about how it will address traffic congestion and what other alternatives the city had considered. So it was helpful to have them there to answer those questions. The open house provided an opportunity for the PUD and city staff to talk about the mitigation proposals being discussed. We also had a video simulation that was available for viewing during the open house that really shows better the alignment of the parkway and the Apple Capitol Loop trail changes. If you'd like to go look at that video, it's an excellent way to kind of get a better visual of what's being conceptually planned right now, and it's available on our public PUD website. So you can go on to the Confluence Parkway page there and click on that video. We will continue to do our due diligence. We're going to continue to participate in the city's NEPA environmental assessment process for the parkway project. We're really at the right point to be looking at the study results and asking these important questions. We need to make sure we have enough information to make our critical decisions. And again, those decisions relate to the ultimate property transfer that is needed and whether the mitigation being proposed is adequate to protect the Confluence State Park and Harran Natural Area, including associated portions of the Apple Capitol Loop Trail that will need to be realigned. I just want to, again, say, you know, this decision is especially difficult given our responsibilities under the Federal Power Act for providing and preserving recreational opportunities. Confluence State Park and the Haran Natural Area, as I mentioned, is recreation mitigation under our Rock Island Hydro Project, which is governed by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. So changes that we make have to be approved by FERC through a license amendment, and it has to be supported by state and federal agencies and tribes. And state and federal agencies are continuing to review the cultural fish and wildlife habitat impacts associated with the parkway. So it's important to note that PUD is not the only entity that's reviewing this project and the potential impacts and helping to determine the mitigation. All of those reviews and the NEPA process is expected to continue through the end of this year. Some of those reviews could take even longer. We're continuing to ask questions and learn more details about the project, and this is key to informing the decisions that the PUD needs to make related to the project. And we're being very careful and considerate to ensuring those decisions are striking the best balance between the local economic and transportation issues, which we know are important, while protecting the environmental and recreation resources enjoyed by the public and inherent in our responsibilities under our FERC license. Just a reminder about the key decisions that the PUD is faced with. We need to make a decision whether we will approve exchanging about 7 acres of park land to the city of Wenatchee for alignment of portions of the parkway project. The city has proposed to replace those lands with equal or lands of higher value. Any transfer or exchange of land in the park will need FERC approval. We need to make a decision to approve removal of the existing pedestrian bridge so that the pedestrian crossing can be combined with the new vehicle bridge. That specifically why that's being requested is to as a enhancement to reduce the number of piers in the water in the Wenatchee River. So by combining the bridges, you're basically removing the piers that we have in the water for the pedestrian bridge so that the new Parkway Bridge piers will basically, you won't have 5 bridges going all the way up the river. You were basically trying to minimize that impact to the Wenatchee River. Upon completion of the NEPA process that the city is undertaking, there will be a 45-day public comment. That's expected to occur later this year, possibly around fall. And we will be asked at that point to provide a letter to the Federal Highway Administration, which will formalize our findings, our concurrence, I guess, with the findings of the environmental assessment. And it'll include our concurrence with the mitigation package to minimize harm to our park resources that are under our jurisdiction. Once the NEPA is complete and the Federal Highway has those comments and our letter, they will review. Well, they also, I just want to back up for a minute. So NEPA is not complete until the fishery agencies have completed a biological opinion and the tribes have to complete their consultation under Section 106. So again, I just want to make it very clear that we are not the only entity that is providing conclusions. There are also other important conclusions and consultations going on at the same time. Federal Highway will ultimately make the final decision related to the Parkway project. Once they have made their conclusion after reading all of the comments and after all of those entities have weighed in, they will complete the NEPA process, and it won't be until that point that we will feel like we have what we need to complete our application for the project boundary changes and the recreation plan adjustments related to the trail and the bridge that will then be sent in for FERC approval. And again, this will all be conceptual, and we would expect that FERC would approve it under the basis of that conceptual planning so that later on, if things change, we would have the ability to come back and make any adjustments if down the road there were some changes that were made as design is further along in the planning stages. So what's next? We do have an online survey that ends today. It opened on March 21st. I'm happy to report, although I'm not so happy to have to go through all these, but we have 900 comments. We hope to bring a summary of those comments, as well as provide the board with the raw data so you can look through them yourself. We will bring that back on April 18th, and we will we're hoping that all of that input will help continue to give the board more information. It'll have a list of the issues and concerns that were brought up by our community and customer owners, and we're just trying to make people aware that it's not too late to provide their input. Preliminary design for the Confluence Parkway is only about 5% complete. Again, this is the NEPA process that the city is undertaking right now is a hope to get the project about 30% complete by the time NEPA is complete. But right now, it's only 5%, so there's still a lot of detail being discussed, a lot of mitigation that's being worked out and discussed. So it's not too late to voice concern. And I just hope that we're making that clear so that it doesn't feel like things are moving very quickly. It feels that way, but now is the time to be asking these important questions. We do expect that the board will have more questions. In your board packet, we did respond to some of the questions that you've had so far. So we put draft on that document intentionally because we want you to know that we know that there's going to be more questions. There might be refinements to some of the responses we've had so far. But there's still a lot of clarification and a lot of things that we're trying to get our arms around. So we expect there to be more. And if you have any further questions or need clarification on some of our responses, we're here to help get you the information you need. So that's where I'll stop and let me know if you have any thoughts, questions, or anything else I can provide for you.
Oh, thank you, Michelle. That was really helpful in many ways, but for me, especially with regards to the timeline on this whole process. Commissioners, any questions, any comments?
I guess my comment would be I'm impressed that we've got so far 900 respondents, and I look forward to seeing the gathering of that data.
I would just like to thank Michelle and the entire staff who has worked so hard to pull all of this together, and even just right now, Michelle, as you explained the process and the timeline, very helpful. And I truly appreciate all of your effort, all of your time, and of course, your continued effort going forward. This is a very, very important topic, and we need to take it with the utmost of seriousness and proceed accordingly. So, and I know we are, and that's just wonderful. Thank you. There is one thing that would be helpful, at least to me, and that is that as we are getting answers to our questions, and it would be helpful to know the source of the answer. Just whether that source is a federal agency providing the answer, or a state agency, or if the answers are coming from internal, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Okay, we will add that. Good suggestion. Thanks. Thank you.
Dennis, do you have anything?
You're on mute.
I'm muted now.
But
I think you said. No, I'm good. I appreciate the effort to work and, the reaching out and the getting the public, feedback. So all good.
So before we move on, commissioners, and while we have Michelle here, the questions that we submitted, and then we received the responses. Commissioners, were you satisfied with, or did you feel like you had adequate answers to our questions?
Yes. In a word.
In a word.
And if I can respond, there's
I need a little clarity, and that was really the source of my question on the source of the answer. There's just two topics that I'd like to dive into just a little bit deeper to make sure that my answer is understood correctly. But I can circle back and get an answer on that. Thank you.
Okay. I had the same question. Who responded? Whose response were we seeing to the very? Sometimes you could tell. Sometimes you couldn't tell. So that would be really helpful. So I just have one comment, and that is so we commissioners will be actually voting on concurrence of this Section 4F requirement, and that requirement stipulates that the Federal Highway Administration, and it's the Federal Highway Administration because we are, I look back, but it's because we are receiving federal funds through the Federal Highway Administration, and so therefore they're the lead federal agency. Is that correct, Michelle?
Yes, the city, yes, for the project, because they're seeking that federal funding, yes, that's correct.
Yeah, so this is where this is our next step in terms of the commissioners making a decision, and we have to determine, per this Section 4F requirement, we have to determine that there is no feasible avoidance alternative to the use of the land, and then that the action includes all possible planning to minimize harm to the property, and then finally determine that the use of the property will have a de minimis impact. So I just wanted to let the other commissioners know, I've asked Justin Erickson if he could provide me, and I suggested maybe the rest of you would want this as well, more background information on the other two options that were not selected when the decision was made by the city to choose the parkway. Because if we're going to make a decision that there's no feasible alternative, I for one need to know more about the other two. I think it was narrowed down to three, the other two options, and that there's no, no avoidance alternative. So I've asked for that information from Justin Erickson, and I think he was going to provide that this week. Okay, so other commissioners, that will be coming your way. All right, great. Thank you, Michelle.
Okay.
So appreciate all the work, yes, you and others, all the work you've done on this.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
More to come, right?
More to come. More to come, exactly. Thank you.
Okay, Commissioner Congdon, for item 5, that will be you.
Yes. So is there any public comment? I know there certainly is. I don't know if people are online. Rebecca, do we have any customers who have registered to be a part of the meeting at this point?
We do have some external callers on the line. But I don't see any virtual hands raised at this moment unless one of the callers has a question.
Yeah, I don't either. So no public comment at this time? Okay. So, Sean, it's not even 11 o'clock.
Right. So we can.
So I think we can move into the business session.
Yep.
Does anybody need a break? Do we need to take a 5-minute break?
I see shaking heads, so I think we're good.
Okay, let's move into that then. All right, we do have a consent agenda. And I guess at this point I need to ask if there are any corrections, any additions to this.
I would move approval of the consent agenda.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of approval indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, say no. The motion is passed. The agenda is approved. So now we can move into the regular agenda, Sean, and I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you, Commissioner Congdon. Item number 8, a resolution replacing and rescinding resolution number 16-14094, 20-14663, and 21-14538 to update the district's investment and banking policy. Sarah Hale is here to answer any questions and to go through the resolution.
Yes, good morning. Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Great.
Yes.
Great. So this resolution that's being presented for your approval today is to update the investment and banking policy to request that the board delegate the approval process for banks, signers, and initiators to the treasurer and CFO jointly. In addition, the board will be notified of any changes to banks, signers, or initiators, during the quarterly investment reporting process. The proposed changes were presented to the board during the March 21st board meeting. Based on feedback from the commission, we made minimal changes to the resolution to provide clarity around the board reporting process. And this proposed change in this resolution to delegate the authority to the treasurer and the CFO will provide efficiencies with no additional risks. Do you guys have any questions?
Okay. Next, item number 9, a resolution deferring to June 1st, 2022, the annual energy charge rate adjustment as included in the district's electric rate Schedule 36, cryptocurrency processing, blockchain processing, and similar loads as adopted via resolution number 18-14287. This is to ratify a motion that was brought up at our last board meeting, and I have Lindsay Mons to talk about it.
Good morning, commissioners. Thank you, Sean. This is Lindsay Mons, a business manager in customer utilities. As Sean mentioned, this resolution is simply to ratify the motion that was made at your last regular board meeting on March 21st. That deferred that market rate adjustment for our Schedule 36 cryptocurrency customers from April 1st until June 1st. No other changes were made to the rate schedule. Are there any questions?
Okay. Item.
Sean, can we just.
Oh, go ahead.
Sean, I'll just. In here. I'll just jump in here a second.
Sure.
Do we have any comments from the public? Any callers, anyone that has a question or a comment at this point? Okay, good. We can go on. Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you.
Item number 10, a resolution authorizing the issuance of a guaranteed maximum price, amendment number 3, to North Bank Civil and Marine, Inc. of Vancouver, Washington, under contract number 20-14, to provide the procurement of the raw material for units U3 through U8 long lead components for the Rock Island Powerhouse number 2 draft tube gate cylinder and hydraulic power unit upgrade. I have Devin Myers here to discuss this resolution and answer any questions you have.
Thanks, Sean. Good morning, commissioners. I am Devin Myers, and I'm a project manager down at Rock Island, involved in Powerhouse 2 rehabilitation program. And as Sean mentioned, this resolution is requesting authorization to execute a guaranteed maximum price amendment for the procurement of raw materials for units U3 through U8, long lead components with Maritime Civil and Marine. And it is for contract 2014, which is the Rock Island Powerhouse 2 draft tube gate cylinder and hydraulic power unit upgrade. The district is using a progressive design build method to procure equipment and services from North Bank for the rehabilitation of the draft tube gate systems for all 8 units at Rock Island Powerhouse 2. This alternative procurement method is authorized under RCW 3910. A little history, the district executed design build contract, including pre-construction services, for about $632,000 in February of 2021. The district has also executed guaranteed maximum price amendment in April of 21 to purchase long lead equipment, and a guaranteed maximum price amendment number two for the installation of this equipment in units one and two in March of 2022 for a combined total of about $2.8 million. At this time, we're requesting approval for the general manager to execute GMP amendment number three for the procurement of raw materials for the remaining six units, long lead components for about $1.4 million. And then as I've said at last time I was here, the project budget for all eight units will be assessed after we're done with the first two unit installations, and we'll report back to you at that time. Are there any questions?
And I have one. Devin, could you give me a working definition of raw materials? You know, I'm thinking ore from a mine. You know, I'm sure that's not it.
Well, it's close. Nope. What we're actually doing here, what we've run into is we're calling raw materials is the steel pipes and the stainless steel barrels to make these big hydraulic cylinders that we're using for the draft tubes. The lead time for these has been pushed out like 6 to 8 months. And so we're trying to procure this equipment, or excuse me, the raw materials, so that in June or July, when we go back with a GMP for the manufacturing of the final components, we'll actually have that stuff on the way. So we won't be delayed.
Thank you so much. That helped.
You bet. So it's the barrels and the cylinders is the raw materials, but yeah, one step past four. Thank you.
Are there any other questions, commissioners?
Okay.
Okay, thank you very much.
Agenda item 11, a resolution rejecting all bids and declaring that no bids were received for the supply of Rocky Reach Switchyard Station Post Insulator, bid number 22-12198, and authorizing the supply of Rocky Reach Switchyard Station Post Insulator be obtained by negotiation. I have Steve Wickel here to discuss this resolution and answer any questions.
Good morning, commissioners. Can everybody hear me?
Yep.
Yes.
Excellent. Good morning. So, as stated, the scope of the bid was to purchase 420 station post insulators for Rocky Reach 230 kV switchyard. This particular type of post insulator has been the subject of industry concern for premature failure, and we've seen evidence of deterioration of our insulators at Rocky Reach switchyard, which is the reason for this replacement project. I'd also like to point out that this bid is a rebid, bid number 22-12082, for which all bids received did not meet our delivery schedule and or specifications. Bid opening for this rebid was on March 22, 2022, and four bids were received. The low bid of $231,000 did not meet technical specification or the delivery. The high bid of $821,000 met technical specifications, but did not meet delivery date and far exceeded the engineer's estimate by more than 15%. The second high bid of $795,000 did not meet delivery schedule and also exceeds the engineer's estimate by 15%. The second lowest bid at $352,000 met the technical specifications and the delivery schedule, but it still exceeded the engineer's estimate by more than 15%. Due to the fact that it's already rebid once, and a limited number of vendors can meet the necessary technical specifications, it's recommended that the Rocky Reach Station Post insulators be procured by negotiation. Construction of the Rocky Reach Post Insulator project planned for October of 2022. The project will enhance the reliability of Rocky Reach Switchyard. Generation outages required to perform this work have been in place for over a year, and delivery schedule and technical specifications are critical. That is that. Are there any questions?
Looks like we're good. Thank you very much. Appreciate the report. So, commissioners, we have 1, 2, 3, 4 resolutions to vote on. I'll entertain a motion.
I would make such a motion.
Second.
So, commissioners, just for the record, I think we need a motion to approve or deny. Or
thank you, Eric.
Yeah, you bet.
I would make a motion to approve the resolutions as presented.
And that's exactly what I seconded.
Thought so.
Thank you, Dennis.
So it's been approved, and I mean, the motion has been made and seconded to approve resolutions 8, 9, 10, and 11 as presented. Any further comments or questions? Hearing none. All those in favor of approval of the resolutions indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Motion's passed. So that takes us to...
Commissioner Congdon?
Yes.
Before we leave, and Brett Vickridge is here, it seems like to me we are in a position where we are a little more frequently negotiating contracts because many of them are falling outside of the 15% bid. Is that an estimate by our engineers? Is that just simply because of how fast the market is changing and the inability to secure and get materials on a timely basis?
Yes, if you're asking Brett Bickford, yeah, we're seeing rapidly changing pricing, and it's very difficult for contractors to hold that pricing. And so that's some of the terms that we're seeing, is we'll ask for the pricing to be held for 45, 60, 90 days while we review the bids, evaluate them, make the awards. And so often we see that. And so we think there is also some speculation of, you know, hedging that price because it is a guaranteed fixed price. And so they're probably adding some to that as well to help secure that. And so that combination, yes.
Okay. I mean, that's just helpful. I mean, it just seems that's kind of the nature of the beast at this point, whether it's a gas pump, grocery store, or buying things for the PUD. But I just wanted that clarification and appreciate your input.
Yes, you're welcome.
Yeah, good question, Dennis. Yeah, and really helpful answer. Okay, so that takes us to, I guess I'll jump in here, Sean.
Okay, you want me to?
Well, capital budget revision, and there you are, Brett, ready to go.
Yes, thank you. Brett Bickford, Managing Director of Generation and Transmission, and I have a motion for a capital budget revision of about $1.348 million to complete the work on Unit B7 modernization at Rock Island Powerhouse 1. The 22 budget was finalized in December with the assumption that liquidated damages for claims of approximately $1.1 million would be recovered from Ondritz, and that was for late delivery of materials and equipment and some district rework, and then all that would be credited back to the project budget. You might recall that multiple outstanding claims on B5, B7, B9, and B10 were reconciled in a field work order in January. And that negated the liquidated damages for B7. And so because there was a no net exchange of funds, this liquidated damages and claims for extra rework was not able to be credited back to the B7 project. So in summary of the $1.3 million budget revision, 1.1 was contemplated in the settlement. And then there was approximately $200,000 for additional costs that the district has incurred to make sure that this unit is of high quality and highly reliable so that we can get the estimated 40 years of service from the machine. Are there any questions?
Commissioners, questions? It is convoluted, but but it is clear, I think, to me anyway. Commissioners, we're good? Thank you, Brett. So,
yes, you're welcome.
The proposed motion is in front of you. Do I have a call for approval?
I would move to approve item number 12, the capital budget revision. To increase the total project budget for capital project on Rock Island. 160016 Rock Island Powerhouse 1 B7 modernization in the amount of $1,348,782. The total projected budget is $33,651,218. The revised total project budget would be $35 million.
And Commissioner Smith, just for clarity, you said
1,348.
You mean the 1,340?
1,000,000. Yeah. Yes.
Just for the record, thanks.
Yes.
Is there a second?
Second.
Thanks. So the motion has been made on the capital budget revision. I won't reread it. And seconded. Any further questions? Hearing none. All those in favor of approval of the motion indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed, say no. Motion is passed. Great. Thank you. Good explanation, Brett. Thank you.
Okay, yes, you're welcome.
That takes care of our resolutions. What's our time?
11.
Just after 11. So, Commissioners, are you okay with we move into manager items? Sean, do we have any manager items? I guess first of all, we should ask.
We do not have any manager items today.
We don't. Okay. Commission items. Commission travel.
Hi. Commissioners, Rebecca. This is Rebecca Newman, Clerk of the Board, and I have a couple of upcoming meetings to review with you. Coming up in April, the 13th to the 15th, we have the Waputa Association meetings. Commissioner Arsenault is planning to attend in person, and it looks like the remaining four commissioners are planning to attend virtually. Are there any changes to that? Okay. On April 27th, Commissioner McKenna plans to attend Energy Northwest, I believe, and we'll follow up with him directly on that. Coming up in May, the 22nd through the 25th, we have the NWPPA Annual Conference. I know it looks like Commissioner Arsenault is planning to attend in person, and then we weren't sure, Commissioner Congdon, if you were planning to attend that as well.
Yes, I'll let you know.
Okay. And then the June, it looks like the Waputa Strategic Planning Committee will meet, and Commissioner Arsenault will likely attend that, but the details haven't been finalized on that yet. And then also in June, we have the APPA National Conference coming up, the 10th through the 15th. It looks like Commissioner Arsenault has expressed an interest in attending that in person. Is there anyone else that planned to attend that meeting?
What are the dates of that conference?
It's June 10th through the 15th.
I'll check back with you.
Okay. And that's what I have for you today, unless you have anything else you need from me.
Thank you, Rebecca. Any questions for Rebecca before we move on? That's helpful. It kind of helps to keep us organized and moving forward. So thanks. Commission items. Anything else, commissioners? Okay, so we're moving right along. Follow up on delegation of action items from the previous board meeting. I guess I'll look to Sean and Rebecca.
Yeah, so from our 3/21/22 board meeting, Rebecca is working on scheduling the Rocky Reach facilities tour with interested commissioners. So that's still in process. And then As far as item 17, delegation of action items, we have two that were today. We have one, Gary Rice will provide additional information on security cameras for the North Shore substation. And then item two, Confluence Parkway, Michelle will update question responses to include the source of the answers. Do you have any further action items?
I can't think of any.
Okay.
I heard somebody. Is there someone trying to speak? Maybe not. Okay. All right. So additional public comment. I don't know if we still have any callers on the line. Is there any comment with regard to any of the items, any of the resolutions or items we've discussed today? No additional comment? All right. Any other matters of general business that need to come before the commission? Hearing none. So it looks like next on the agenda is to move into executive session. Commissioners, how about if we take a break? Take a break and come back for the... Do we need to... Eric, legal counsel, our legal guy, Eric. Is there any reason why we need to wait till 1 p.m.?
No, Commissioner. No, in fact, anticipating moving through the agenda quickly today, we actually removed the 1 o'clock note from the agenda with the business session so that interested folks from the public would know we were planning to move through the entire agenda this morning. And I would just say if you want to take a break, that's great. I would think we could easily wrap the executive session before the noon hour. So if you just want to read the reason and say we'd go in for approximately 40 minutes following a five-minute break or so, we'd be set to go.
Okay. Does that sound good, commissioners?
Yeah, you got to...
Is that adequate?
She will. Yeah. Okay.
All right. So we will, following a five-minute break, we will move into executive session. Actually, why don't we take our break, and then when we come back, I'll explain all this. I'll tell what we're going in for.
Actually,
would you rather do it the other way?
Yeah, Commissioner, to do it the other way actually would give us that 5 minutes to switch over to the other phone call line. So if you just want to say following a five-minute break, and then we'll enter executive session and read what's there, we'd be set to go.
Okay, so that's what we'll do. Following a five-minute break, we will go into executive session to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or is likely to become a party, and or legal risks as authorized by RCW 42.30.111I. And it is 11:15, so shall we come back in at 11:20?
Right, and would you just note that we would plan to come out of executive session no later than the noon hour?
Yes, so we will, this will be about a 40-minute executive session, so we should come out of executive session at 12 noon.
Thank you, Commissioner, that's great.
Okay, good, thanks. So this is Chelan, Public Utility District Board of Commissioners. We are coming back into general session. It is, we have come out of executive session. It is 11:45. No decisions were made, no actions were taken. And so at this point, we will adjourn the meeting.